didn't move. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown. You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another impressive preseason victory for the Philadelphia Eagles here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and I think we've got another great show for you here on episode number 23 of the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Leading off, we've got Greg Cosell and Chalk Talk, one of my favorite segments that we do each and every week here on the podcast, and we get really into the thick of it with X's and O's. So please keep listening for that Chalk Talk segment. Two technique this week. We go into what it's like to play as a single high safety with veteran safety Chris Maragos, a special teams maven for the Philadelphia Eagles, and one of my favorite guys on the team as well. And then we get into Saturday scouting, talking college football. It all starts this week officially as we get into it here with Tony Pauline from DraftInsiders.net, one of my favorite guys in the business. But before we get into all that, it's time to welcome in my favorite guy in the room, the man with a plan, my esteemed producer, Brian Thomas. What's up, BT?
What's up, sir? How are you?
Doing all right. Doing all right. Say,
episode 23.
Yeah, you know, it's like, keep it going. You got to go back to episode one from last year, and we took a few months off.
I just remember the infancy of all this podcast stuff, and now we're into year two, so it's...
Well, hopefully a year from now, it's even more developed.
We have a studio. That'd be awesome.
That'd be great, but, you know, how's
everything with you, man?
Everything's good. Everything's good. It's like that hectic, you know, like that week before training camp starts where it's like, oh, man, training camp starts, there's like a million things I got to do. I feel like that right now getting ready for next week for the start of the regular season, because now we get into our schedule of, you know, all right, Monday I got to do this, Tuesday I got to do this. We got the show. We're shooting Eagles game plan for the first time on Wednesday, a week from this Wednesday. So it's kind of...
I compare it to like the eye of the storm, right? Yeah. You're in a hurricane, but it's the calm before... You know, really ramp up to, and then cuts are going to happen, and so it's a busy time of year where everyone's trying to finish up your preseason responsibilities, but at the same time, kind of get ready for week one.
Exactly. So it's a little bit stressful, but I'm excited. I mean, it's 2 weeks from tonight. We're filming this Monday afternoon, and 2 weeks from tonight, we're taking on the Atlanta Falcons week one. The season will be underway, and it's especially
what we saw in the Packers game. Whew. I mean, it leaves a great teaser for what we might see in week one.
The offense was just so much fun.
I know it had to leave a ton of good stuff for the article.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we covered Sam Bradford and his performance. Really, and they did what they have been doing in the passing game where it's been, you know, four, five, maybe six concepts they just run over and over and over. And they've had a lot of success with it because they do it at up tempo, and you know, they do it out of a bunch of different formations, a bunch of different looks and personnel groupings. But Sam was great. I mean, 10 for 10, three touchdowns. You can't ask for more. Run game I thought was strong. Defensively, I thought a lot of the backups played well in terms of the outside linebacker position and held the edge. So if you haven't watched it yet, go on, check it out. I've got my articles up on the site. You got all the vines and all
love
the pictures
the vines.
And stuff. Thank
love
you.
Love the vines.
It's been received well so far. Trying to find other ways to improve
using,
that article.
Using the spotlight and a lot of different tools.
That's my favorite. My favorite is the spotlight.
You gave me the heads up when you added all the new tools.
Oh, yeah. So I was excited, man.
It's really great kind of seeing where it went from last year to this year. You can really illustrate and show a lot more.
When we upgraded that software, I was in the studio for like 2 days. In like April, I pulled up a stool and I was on that Telestrator all day. It's great. So there'll be lots of more stuff to actually we'll be able to unveil as Eagles game plan and all the other pieces of analysis we're going to be doing will start coming into the fold here next week. But all right, let's get into the thick of it here. We've got Greg Cosell in Chalk Talk. Let's get to it right now.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Join me once again here on Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL film senior producer Greg Cosell. Greg, we are 1 week away now from the start of the regular season. How excited are you to be done with the preseason almost?
You know, I hate to say this publicly, Fran, but I usually don't watch a ton of tape involving the fourth preseason game. So yeah. I'll probably stick to plan on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't say I don't blame you, but... Well, going back to the third preseason game, before we get into the topic that I really wanted to hit you on with this week was Sam Bradford and his performance. Obviously, 10 for 10, three touchdowns. Really, you know, as for what you can ask for, a perfect performance in his second game here as an Eagle. What did you see from Bradford when you watched tape?
Well, it's really the perfect combination of scheme and quarterback, because when Bradford came out of Oklahoma, and what people still hang their hat on with a healthy Sam Bradford is accuracy, touch, and arm strength. And he made some terrific touch throws. The two outs he threw to Jordan Matthews, great touch, great. Particularly the first one had unbelievable accuracy because Matthews was not really wide open.
Right.
I mean, those are the kinds of throws. Even the touchdown, the first touchdown to Darren Sproles, which was beautifully set up. Great concept to get Sproles matched on a linebacker on the wheel route. Just a terrific throw. I mean, you know, it's easy to rip Sam Barrington, the linebacker, on Darren Sproles, but it wasn't as if Sproles was just so wide open. I mean, that ball had to have the perfect touch and precise ball location, and that's what Sam Bradford at his best is. And I think in this particular offense, and again, what did we notice? How quickly the ball came out. That's a function of the offensive scheme and the concepts, and I think that was the feeling in getting Sam Bradford is the ball's going to come out quick in Chip Kelly's offense, and he's a precise ball location thrower, and he certainly has enough arm to make any throw. So you kind of got a glimpse, I think, of what Chip Kelly and the Eagles staff had in mind when they made the trade for Sam Bradford. And by the way, if this plays, and again, he's not going to go 10 for 10 every week.
Sure, absolutely.
But if he plays at his best, then giving up a second-round pick for Sam Bradford will seem insignificant.
No question. And you talked about just getting the ball out quickly. His decisiveness, I thought,
yep,
was the quality that I think that fans don't necessarily see, you know, looking back at St. Louis and what his career was there. And now you see him here and just the ball coming out so quickly. You look at that third touchdown to Brent Celek where he looked at that high-low concept to the left. It was Riley Cooper, and I believe it might have been Matthews.
Well, they also had Darren Sproles out of the backfield on that same concept, which was really interesting because that was a great example of where Sproles impacted the coverage. And even though he was probably not part of the route concept in terms of the ball being thrown to him, just Sproles coming out of the backfield offset impacted how the defense played.
Yeah, no question. You know, his ability just looking the safety to the left, and immediately he looked right into the middle of the field and got rid of the ball to Brent Celek for that third touchdown. It's really, really exciting if you're an Eagles fan.
Yeah, and just one final point. One of the things that over the years I've sort of really come to believe in and articulate it this way, which I think a lot of people don't say it this way, but one of the things with quarterbacks is to become a higher-level quarterback is you must eliminate what's not there quickly. And the really good quarterbacks do that really quick.
Yeah.
You know, the great ones actually eliminate what's not there before the snap of the ball.
Sure.
It's the quarterbacks that they don't eliminate till their third step on their drop. Those are the quarterbacks that get in trouble because then the defense wins.
Yep.
But Bradford in that game, and obviously the offense helps, but that's what coaching is. But Bradford was very, very good at eliminating what wasn't there and going to exactly the right spot.
No question. All right, well, let's move on from Sam Bradford. We're going to be talking about him a lot here
yes,
in the
we
next
will.
Few weeks. But in our last preseason edition of Chalk Talk, I figured we'd talk about another big picture topic. And one topic that we haven't hit on, we talked about coverages, we talked about the pass game, we've talked about some run concepts as well, but defensive pressure, blitz concepts,
yep,
and then breaking down protection schemes. I guess before we get into individual concepts, individual schemes, what overall is the one factor you think that, you know, we talk all the time about the college level and how there's not as much blitzing. The blitzing isn't as sophisticated as you see in the NFL game. What is the one thing that stands out to you as the biggest difference? What are the things that you see in college that just get amplified once you move up to the NFL?
Well, in college, number one, you don't see anywhere near the frequency of blitz, and you certainly don't see the detail of blitz. I hate to use the word complexity, but the detail of blitz. In college, you see basic blitzes. Like, because there's a defined short side of the field in college, you'll often see corner blitzes from the boundary,
yep,
from the short side of the field. Or you'll see just a slot blitz. You'll see zone blitz concepts, which have become very basic. In the NFL, you see far more than that. But I think in order to start talking about blitz and how teams design pressures, you really have to start with how almost all NFL offenses deal with fronts. And the way they deal with fronts is this. There's five offensive linemen. Now, they're responsible for four defenders. Now, if you're playing a 4-3 defense, if there's four down linemen,
right,
The five offensive linemen will be responsible for the four down linemen and one other player that they designate.
Yep. So you typically, what you'll often hear is, and people think that this is the run game, but it's a lot that has to do with the pass game as well. You'll hear the quarterback, sometimes you'll hear the center, you'll hear their center say, 52's the mic, 52's the mic. That person that they designate as the mic is typically the next man that they
is
that
the
they are
fifth
for.
Yes. Pass rusher. He's being
Correct.
Designated as the fifth pass rusher.
Right.
This is why 3-4 defenses have always been thought, and I'm talking about base 3-4s now.
Sure, absolutely.
This is why base 3-4s have always been viewed as more difficult for offenses, because now who are your two pass rushers beyond the three down linemen? Because now there's really four guys to choose from. So it makes it a little more difficult as to who the five offensive linemen designate as the two extra pass rushers.
Right.
Now, obviously, it's easy to say, well, if you have, you know, a Lawrence Taylor type, a DeMarcus Ware, let's use him maybe as the example over the last 10 years of that great 3-4 outside pass rusher. Obviously, teams will designate that player, but then there's still another player you must designate. But all protections pretty much start with the fact that the five offensive linemen are responsible for four so-called defensive linemen and one other player. Then it goes to the running back. Then the running back is responsible for the next guy, whoever they deem as the next
right.
guy.
Right, exactly.
So all protections start that way. So when you hear an announcer say, hey, they broke down the protection, the key to that is understanding, if you're a defensive coach, how teams pass protect. And every team has a specific sort of concept that is their foundation. Some teams might slide. By that you mean you take a certain number of people on your offensive line and they all move to one side. And we don't want to get too detailed
yeah.
here.
You could be, see a three-man slide, it could
right,
be a four-man
right, right.
slide. There's a good, it, in the NFL level, it gets much more complicated
correct,
than college.
Correct. And then there's, you know, sort of fan protections where you're not sliding the line. You know, and again, we don't want to get into all the specific breakdowns of it, but every team has foundational pass protection concepts. So now defensive coaches know what those concepts are, and they know how those concepts apply to where players line up. So let's say you're a defensive coach, and you do something that is often called an overload, where you line up three or four defenders to one side of the formation. Well, the defense knows how the offense will react to that. So then they work off that.
Sure.
They might then show that and blitz from the other side because they know the offense is going to move in the direction of the more bodies.
Right.
So this is what breaking down protection means, because that's a term you hear all the time. But the bottom line is, in the NFL, nothing is a surprise. All defensive coaches know how their opponents pass protect. And they know how they pass protect when they're in base personnel. They know how they pass protect when they're in three wide receivers. They know how they pass protect if there's two backs. They know how they pass protect if there's one back.
Right.
Because, you know, I remember this goes back years and years ago. Sid Gilman, a name I know you know.
Sure.
Back in his day, in the early 60s, every team played with two backs, a tight end, and two wide receivers. That's the way every team played. So now you had basically eight people available for pass protection because you had the five offensive linemen, you had a tight end, and you had two backs. Now what Sid Gilman did is he took one of his backs, it was a fullback named Keith Lincoln, who was a great receiver, and he started to sort of split him out. Now that changes pass protection. Why? It's numbers. There's one less body
right.
you have in pass protection.
Right.
So now your concepts have to be different because you have one less body. And that continues to happen in the NFL. If you want to line up with a 2x2 set and the two receivers to each side split and just one back, that means the most you can have is 6-man pass protection. If you want to go empty with no backs, that means the most you can have is 5-man pass
That's
protection.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's all numbers, and then defense is the same way. What you ideally like to do on defense is rush with as few as possible, which doesn't just mean four down linemen. We've seen with a lot of these zone blitz schemes and pressure concepts where four guys rush, but it might be two defensive linemen, a linebacker, and a safety.
Exactly. And you see a bunch of guys dropping out.
Exactly.
No doubt.
So, but it's all where they come from based on the defense's understanding of how offenses pass protect.
No question. And just like how we've talked about in the past with pass concepts against coverages, it really comes down to, from a game planning perspective, trying to predict tendencies from an opponent. So you may know, like, okay, if they're an empty, this is how this offensive line protects 83% of the time. The other 17,
correct,
they protect this way. If they've got one back in, this is how they protect 75% of the time. So now you're trying to see, okay, what are the different things that they're going to try and do? If we do this, how do we? What are they going to do, and how do we react to that and take advantage of that? One of the things I've been fascinated with as I've continued to learn more about protection schemes is, you know, you've got just in its basic form, in a lot of different slide protections, you've got a zone side to the offensive line and a man side to the offensive line. And ideally, just like how in coverage teams want to try and run different pick concepts and rub concepts to try and get defenders confused, defenses will run different twists, different blitzes at that man side to get those linemen confused so that they can't react and protect the quarterback.
And in fact, this goes back to Dick LeBeau, and Bill Davis here in Philadelphia sort of began his career in Pittsburgh in the early 90s with Dom Capers, Dick LeBeau, Marvin Lewis was on that staff. But the whole premise, if you talk to Dick LeBeau, and I'm sure Bill Davis believes it as well, it's very difficult to get someone clean to the quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
If that happens, you're thrilled.
Right.
But it's very hard to design and say, okay, we're going to design a blitz and a guy's going to get clean, unblocked to the quarterback. So what you try to do, and it plays beautifully off what you said with slide protection concepts where there's a zone side and a man side, is you try to get a good pass rusher matched up on a back.
Yeah.
I mean,
the back typically is on the man side.
Correct. Because normally,
right,
the back is on the opposite side of the slide.
Exactly.
And the slide is the zone, and the opposite side is the man.
Right.
So what you try to do is create schemes in which you get a really good pass rusher. Let's say Connor Barwin is your guy. You want to get Connor Barwin 1-on-1 on a back.
So you want to try and get the defense to slide to the opposite side of Connor Barwin to make it man to Barwin's,
correct,
side and isolate Barwin on a back that way.
Correct. That Dick LeBeau would do this all the time through the years, whether it would be Greg Lloyd. He did it with James Harrison in his prime. That's the concept. And then what you try to do is then you muddy the picture on defense and you see – Dom Capers do it with Clay Matthews. Dick LeBeau started doing it with James Harrison, where instead of lining up on the line of scrimmage, these players might line up in a stacked position, but they would still rush. But now it would be more difficult for the offense to sort of understand where they might be coming from and what gap they might attack.
So there's two ways that I've seen Bill Davis, because I watch Bill Davis's defense, obviously, every week.
Sure.
And two of the things that I really, really love that he does to generate pressure, and a lot of people have questioned the outside linebacker position and whether or not the Eagles are going to be able to get a steady rush. I think that Bill Davis does a lot to create,
yes,
pressure up front with different ways that they align and different ways that he executes things post-snap. But you look at the – let's start with the first way. One of the things that I love that he'll do is that he'll line up a defensive lineman in a center, in an A-gap, and he'll have that defensive lineman cross the center's face, forcing him to go in one direction. And now what you're doing is you're cutting that protection in half because you know now you've got his guard and tackle to that side and maybe a back, so that's three. If you send four at those three players, now you've got a mismatch and you've got a free rusher at the quarterback.
And one thing we should address, and I hope people can visualize it, is what has become so prevalent in the NFL now, double A-gap
alignments.
That's the
other thing that he does, exactly.
Everybody does this now.
No
Certainly
question.
Bill Davis does.
Yes.
And see, here's a perfect example where you're dictating protection. If you put two defenders in the double, in each A-gap.
Right.
Okay. Because we know that there's not one offense in the league that will allow an inside rusher clean to the quarterback. So if you put two defenders in the A-gap, they don't have to rush, but the offense must account for that.
They have to.
They have to. Now, there's two ways to do that. You can either do a total line slide, or you can have the center pick up one of the rushers and the back pick up the other. See, and this is how you can dictate protection, because let's say that neither one of those rushers comes. You still have eaten up the center taking one and the back must step inside. He must.
Yeah, if he doesn't, he's getting his quarterback killed. You can't let a free – if you're going to let a free rusher come, he can't be up the middle. He can't be in the end.
No. So now if you know the back is going to step inside, now you can bring someone from the outside because now the back is eaten up and the back can't – it's too hard to step inside and then quickly scan outside, especially if that rusher is, let's say, a safety or a nickel or dime corner.
Sure.
Because now you're rushing with speed.
Right.
And that has become so prevalent in the NFL, these double A-gap looks. Now teams even, not only do they bring two guys through the A-gap, but teams now often bring three guys through the A-gap. They bring a third guy who's not aligned there to start, obviously, but it could be a safety. It could be a defensive lineman on a stunt following into the A-gap. But teams have become so creative in attacking those A-gaps because they know that offenses cannot allow A-gaps to be clean.
Right, exactly. And you look at how teams, and this is a philosophical thing, you look at how a lot of teams try and build their roster, and a lot of teams you'll see in New Orleans right now, they've put a lot of importance on that interior line to try and see if they can build, you know, and build the pocket, make it so that your quarterback is able to step up and there's no pressure coming right at him up front. So, that's coming from a lot of the A-gap pressure.
And that's why a lot of teams now play dime, in my view, because you're getting an extra defender with speed. Because that's the thing. Offensive linemen, you know, they live in that in sort of a box because their hands are on the ground. They're 300-pound guys. It is so hard for them to be able to block either a corner or a safety in a dime package, sub-package, that's coming from a little bit of distance because it's not really on their radar. You know, if you come from a little bit of distance, it's really, really difficult. So now it's speed with pressure. It's not just the concept itself.
Right.
But it's speed on top of the concept.
Sure.
And more teams in the NFL are playing with six defensive backs, dime, and the Eagles did a lot of that last year. We'll see how this season progresses based on how they see their personnel. But we saw last year as the season progressed, and it was Nolan Carroll who was actually kind of the dime safety slash linebacker last year. If he ends up starting on the outside, then obviously he's not going to be that guy. But it's just a great way to do it because you enhance the concepts with speed.
No question. So the last thing I want to hit on, zone pressure. And obviously this is a big topic. We could have talked the entire time about zone pressure. But one of the misconceptions, I think, of that tactic is that, you know, you associate it with Dick LeBeau and these pressure defenses. It's not an over-aggressive scheme in terms of, you know, sending the house at the quarterback. It's more so in terms of safety and playing conservative because you've got five rushers and you've got six in coverage with three deep and three more often than not, three deep and three underneath. You're protecting yourself on the back end and you're sending only five rushers at the quarterback.
Well, when I worked on the book with Ron Jaworski when we did the book together about 5 years ago, The Games That Changed the Game, one of the chapters was on Dick LeBeau. And in researching Dick LeBeau, all he was trying to do, and it sounds silly now, all he was trying to do, because at the time it was, he wasn't the first to do it, but he was the first to really look at the concept and say, this could be a foundation of a defense and needs to be, was to try to create what is called safe pressure. Now, at the time, Bill Walsh's offense and Don Coryell's offense, those two pass games were taking the league by storm, and Dick was trying to figure out a way to pressure the quarterback without sacrificing coverage. That's the principle behind zone blitz pressure.
And again, it comes back to numbers. If you can keep six on the back end and only rush with five, you've kind of got the best of both worlds and protecting yourself on the back end and being able to have a good amount of numbers to attack the quarterback.
And now we've seen over the years with the evolution of these zone blitz concepts, sometimes you'll see a team rush with four and get someone in clean or get the matchup they want on a back with just four. And as I said, it's not four defensive linemen.
Right.
It's, you know, a linebacker and a safety is part of the four. And that's where we started. We've come full circle. That comes down to the fact that you understand how the team will protect, how the offense will protect, and you can attack that protection even by rushing just four.
Exactly. So It's very, very interesting.
Oh, we could talk about this all day.
Just keep going, and hopefully we'll have some other opportunities to do so later this season.
I think we will, because Bill Davis does a lot of this kind of stuff.
Bill Davis does a lot, and we're going to see a lot of we'll see Rex Ryan. We'll see Todd Bowles. There'll be lots of opportunities here for us to talk about defensive pressure. Greg Cosell, appreciate the time. We'll see you next week here on Chalk Talk.
All right, Fran, thanks.
Great stuff again from Greg. Once again, you know, it's just fun having him in studio each week just because I get to talk football with him. And I think that's what he likes too. You know, we talk with Greg every week, and we're one of many outlets that do so. But everyone wants to ask him, what's the latest? What's Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo? What is Aaron Rodgers going to do without Jordy Nelson? What are the Patriots going to look like on defense? What are the Cowboys going to look like with DeMarco Murray? Everyone knows to ask Greg those questions because he watched the tape. It's just great to be able to sit and just talk kind of big picture, philosophical topics with him in terms of football, because he's one of the best at having those conversations.
It's an NFL meat sandwich. I'm telling you, you get all the great stuff between two slices of bread. He gives you everything you need. And what I like about Greg is he just has no bias. He will tell you exactly what he sees. And he's not a big fan of the kind of silly media questions that you kind of hear, rank this or what do you think of that? Because he'll tell you, I don't know the scheme they're running. I don't know what this guy's responsibility is on that play. So I really like to get his take and see kind of what he sees from the outside and just from the bird's eye view of what he's watched on the tape.
No question. So what have you seen from looking at iTunes?
Well, watching the tape there, people are doing well, giving us comments. You know, weeks past, we've gotten a lot of people giving us what they like and what they don't like. So whatever you guys can do in terms of just rating the podcast, whatever you think, good or bad, giving us comments, it really helps us improve the show, and all those things help make the podcast a much better program. So whatever you guys can do, wherever you consume it, tune in Podbay for Bo.
Podbay, that's right.
You know, iTunes, whatever you can do, just give us a comments, give us your thoughts, and we'll try to tailor a show for you guys.
No question. And you know, again, just go on, give us a rating, give us a like, and leave a comment. We'll keep it going. But let's keep this ball rolling here on this podcast. Again, I teased it earlier in the show. I caught up with veteran safety Chris Maragross, and one of my favorite players on the team. Easily.
Great guy.
Great, great guy. So really excited for you guys to hear the conversation with him on playing as a post safety in the middle of the field. Let's jump right in.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Here now with Eagle safety Chris Maragross. And Chris, I wanted to focus today on playing single high safety and what that means for the defense and what your role is in that. Obviously, there's a number of different coverages where you're going to be in that role. But just in general, what are your responsibilities as a single high safety?
Well, I think first off, single high safety, you're a racer for a lot of things. You want to make sure, your initial snap, you got enough depth, to where you need to be able to cover, sideline to sideline, do a lot of different things. And then at that point, then you really want to try to apex the formation so you can make sure you can give help every single direction to each guy. And so when you're back there, you want to get a good read on, ahead of time, what routes you're trying to diagnose, down and distance, what things could possibly happen. Then you want to look at matchups. Let's say you're in a cover one situation, for instance. Then you want to look at a matchup. Yeah, maybe you have a linebacker on a wide receiver or something, so you want to shade that way to maybe help out, overlap a little bit better. Really, when you start understanding your run pass keys, with the center guard transaction, whether they're down blocking or whether they're high hats, then you can start developing a good speed in your pedal to really get in a good position to cover the field. And then at that point, then you want to get your eyes on the quarterback, start feeling the routes out of your peripheral vision, and hopefully you get a quarterback that can stare down a route and you can maybe get a good jump on it.
So everything you just said, it was about probably like 35, 40 seconds, happens in what, a second and a half, 2 seconds maybe?
Yeah, you got about 3 to 4 seconds to diagnose all those things, just initially real fast. So a lot of training goes involved, a lot of things that you really got to be able to eliminate really quickly. And you got to make great decisions, because if you move the wrong way and the quarterback goes the other way, those guys, if they're in a man-to-man coverage, might be, singled out in like a zero coverage situation. So,
and how much does it change when you're playing cover one and you've got man coverage underneath, as opposed to when it's cover three and you've got three guys sharing the middle of the field or the deep part of the field together?
Yeah, that depends. Then you're really looking a lot more at formations. And then as routes develop, if we're going to shove a zone, if we're going to, just play it straight up, what routes you're getting from the offense, then you can really start weaving and directional going, based on what you're getting at that point. So that one's a little bit more on the fly on what you need to do in terms of where you need to place your body.
Are there certain route concepts that you feel are more popular to try to attack that single high safety?
Yeah, you know, I think it comes down to really the offense and how they're trying to execute. You know, in any given play, you can throw any coverage at them. And so, you know, really, you know, we always think that, you know, if we're doing the things that we need to do, then, you know, we can stop anything they throw at us. So everybody's got to be able to rack really quick, and everybody's got to be tied to the same string and make sure they're putting themselves in good positions to help their teammates out too.
Great stuff from Chris. Again, one of my favorite guys on the team. And I think that he and I hit it off right from the jump. We had him on the Eagles Insider podcast last year, and he told me that he read my pieces. So right off, I was like, all right, you're one of my favorite players on the team. He's a great guy.
He knew right away what you were referring to, and I'm like, that means he read the article. I was like, that's great.
He's awesome. And you guys, you know, one of our producers, Nick Rotondi, was able to get out in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, he went to Wisconsin, where he works out in the offseason. Actually works out with J.J. Watt. They were teammates at Wisconsin. So he got a chance to go back there and hang out with him and kind of spend some time with him. He has a kind of unconventional story in terms of how he got into football. His brother was actually the Wisconsin Badger mascot, basically putting a good word for him to, hey, take a look at my brother. He's really good. Walked onto the team, and the story's kind of gone ever since. So he's a great guy, hard worker, but he's one of those guys that you can kind of just talk to in the hallway. He's just a really nice guy.
No question. Well, Chris did us the favor of teaching all of you how to play as a middle-of-the-field safety. So now I'm just going to teach all of you how to go and subscribe to a podcast. It's really easy. If you're listening to this on the Eagles app or on the website and you like what you hear, it's really easy. Just go on your phone, go to your podcast app, and all of your phones have it. Just go to your podcast app, just search Eagle Eye in the Sky, you hit subscribe, and now this show will download automatically to your phone each and every week. You can listen whenever you want. In your car, you can listen at work. I don't know, BT, where do you listen to podcasts?
I listen to the podcast in the car.
If you say at work, I was going to say, we'll call you out a little bit.
Well, I do listen to it at work because when I'm editing it. But
well, yeah, sure.
I like to listen to it on the ride home, kind of have it kind of uninterrupted and listen to it kind of an outside source while I'm just kind of driving home.
That's right.
It's an easy way, especially with the traffic out in Philly.
Yeah,
so.
No question. So, again, you go, you search for it, you download it right to your phone automatically. You don't have to worry about it. You just go to your phone when you want to listen, wherever you want to listen. Search for this podcast. You have the Eagles Insider podcast. The Journey to the Draft podcast will be coming soon. And the College Draft podcast with myself and Ross Tucker as well. So there's a ton of great podcasts out there. You just have to know where to look. BT, you were the one that turned me on to podcasts a while back. I haven't consumed content the same way since then. So go check it out. If you like what you hear, keep listening to podcasts. All right, let's wrap this show up like we do each and every week. Let's talk some college football with my good buddy, Tony Pauline.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
Joining me this week on Saturday Scouting, my good friend, it's been a long time, about 4 or 5 weeks now since we've heard from you, Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. You can follow him on Twitter, at Tony Pauline. Tony, what's going on, man?
Well, getting ready for kickoff. I mean, we had a small kickoff last Saturday with a good Division I AA game, but, you know, really the second phase of the scouting season starts this Saturday with the kickoff of the regular season, so the fun is just beginning.
No question about it, but... let's get into it here. Now that the season is starting, who is a player or two that scouts are most excited about with the season starting? Is there anyone that has gotten a lot of buzz that they're most excited about?
Well, I think some of the linebackers, some of the junior linebackers, Jalen Smith of Notre Dame, a lot of people are very interested to see him, how he does. Eli Apple of Ohio State doesn't really get the notoriety outside the scouting community that he does inside. I mean, people feel that this guy is going to be a special type of player, and they're very interested to see all of the offensive tackles to see how that how that pans out. You know, Tummel of Mississippi, Stanley of Notre Dame, who's slightly overrated. Texas A&M's got another tremendous underclassman offensive tackle, and Taylor Decker, who's going to have to go up against a terrific pass rusher and Daddy Nicholas on Monday. So they're excited about the offensive tackles, the top offensive tackles as well.
So you talked about Eli Apple, who was a redshirt sophomore. He started last year every game for Ohio State on that championship defense as a redshirt freshman. So he's still... I think he's on the brink of being on the national spotlight. I don't know that everybody knows about him. But are there any other of these rising underclassmen who's going to be a junior this year or maybe a redshirt sophomore that fits that mold? Someone who maybe the national population doesn't know about him yet, but his name will be a household name coming up after this season.
Well, there's actually two guys, and one of them is Eli Apple's teammate, Tyvis Powell, the safety, who, you know, there's so much talent on that Ohio State defense. Some guys get lost in the shuffle, and Powell was kind of a guy who didn't get a lot of notoriety, but you talk to scouts, and they're stoked to watch him play. 76 tackles last year, 4 interceptions. He's 6'2", just under 210 pounds. He plays every bit of that. He shows himself to be a complete safety. So Tyvis Powell of Ohio State is a guy to watch, you know, on that Ohio State defense, and with the Boses, with the Bells, with the Apples, there's so much talent there. Kind of gets lost in the shuffle, but scouts talk about him as they do a kid by the name of Kamayalei Correa out of Boise State. Smallish defensive end who projects to outside linebacker, 6'3", probably about 6'2 and change, 200 on the high 230s, just about 240 pounds, 52 tackles, 19 tackles for loss, and 12 sacks last year. But when you watch him play, you know, he plays strong. He's not really destroyed at the point of attack. What I really like about him is the fact that they use him in space, and he's going to be an outside linebacker at the next level. And when he shows ability in pursuit, he shows ability dropped off the line of scrimmage in coverage on passing downs. The Boise State program has had a lot of success putting that type of player into the NFL with guys like DeMarcus Lawrence and Shea McClellan. I think right now Correa projects as a top 60 pick with a good year. He could move into the top 45. And the information I've received just this week is that Correa of Boise State is going to enter the draft.
Ooh,
so that is a guy to keep an eye on.
And very interesting. Okay, well, obviously these guys, again, they're not on the national radar yet. Are there any defenders? And obviously everyone now is looking for those big-time pass rushers, those penetrating defensive tackles, the three down linebackers, the safeties that can play all over the field, those big long corners. Everyone with the high-powered offenses in the NFL, defense is at a premium right now in the NFL draft. Is there any defenders? Are there any defenders here on the national stage that are a little bit underrated in your mind right now?
Yeah, absolutely. First one is a guy who didn't even play last year. That would be Kaveri Russell of Notre Dame. When you go back to the 2013 film, I mean, he looked like he had first-round potential. He was a shutdown corner for Notre Dame. He didn't play last year, but he came into the season with very high grades from scouts who also watched his 2013 film and said, you know what, this guy is someone who can start on Sundays. So, obviously, he's got to get his game back on track. They got a big contest the first game out of the season, Notre Dame. So he's going to be basically, you know, thrown right into the fire. But he has all the skills to be a top 45 pick, if I dare say not a first-round pick, if he builds upon where he left off in 2013 and is able to improve. And then the other guy would be Andrew Billings of Baylor. You know, everyone talks about Baylor. They talk about Sean Open. But it's Billings is the guy there, the big nose tackle, who basically makes things go. He either is making plays behind the line of scrimmage, he shows the athleticism to change direction, get outside the box, or he occupies the blockers and creates opportunities for his teammates. So Billings of Baylor and Russell of Notre Dame are two guys who I think are vastly underrated. And really, come April 2016, you could be talking about these guys as top 32 selections.
Well, how about on the other side? Is there anybody that's overrated right now in your mind on the defensive side of the football?
Well, I'm going to go with Billings' teammate, Sean Open. I mean, he looks the part. He's got some pretty significant stats, 11 sacks and 19 and a half tackles. But when you watch Oakman, I kind of get the feeling I'm watching Quentin Culpepper in a sense that there's a guy who could really do more. He could be more dominant. He's one of these guys that once he's blocked, he stays blocked. He struggles getting off of lesser opponents when he really shouldn't. You know, he looks the part, but he doesn't always play it. And let's not forget, I mean, scouts stamped him with a fourth-round grade entering the season, so I'm not alone in that opinion. The other guy would be Shalik Calhoun of Michigan State, a guy who gets a lot of headlines, but, I mean, he's 6'5". He's in the mid-250s as far as his measurables are concerned. He runs in the 4.8s. He's a solid pass rusher. He was very good as a sophomore, did not do all that well last year. I just think with those measurables and with his limitations, he can struggle at the next level. I don't know that he's an every-down lineman. He may have to put on some weight. He's a solid pass rusher, but he's going to struggle getting off blocks at the next level. You know, Michigan State plays Western Michigan next weekend to start off the season. And you know, the game should be a mismatch, but Western Michigan's got a very good left tackle, a short guy who's going to project to guard at the next level. His name is Willie Beaver. So if anyone's watching that game, just watch that matchup between Shalique Calhoun and Willie Beavers. Beavers can make a big name for himself, or Shalique Calhoun could drop down draft boards if he does not have a good game and really dominate Beavers, who is a solid NFL prospect.
Very interesting. Well, one guy that you said last time we spoke, which was in the very beginning of the summer, right as training camp was getting ready to start, you said that Christian Hackenberg was a guy that you looked at as overrated. What is the latest buzz on Hackenberg out of Penn State?
Well, the latest buzz is people feel that unless something disastrous happens, he's going to enter the draft. And, in fact, I've heard from several people, it may only be a rumor, but he's already decided on representation, who his agent's going to be when he enters the April 2016 draft. And they may say it's only rumor, but you know what? Where there's smoke, there's fire. When I talk to scouts, they say, you know, the thing about Hackenberg is you can't read too much into stats. But when you got a quarterback, you want to see a quarterback who completes at least 60% of his passes. Hackenberg hasn't done that in 2 years. I mean, his best year was in 2013 when it was 58.9%. Last year is 55.8% completion percentage with 12 TDs and 15 interceptions. And scouts are very worried. So when you talk to the inner circle of scouts, they are by no means of the same mind with people who feel that Hackenberg is a franchise quarterback. They love his physical skills. But the problem is once he's under center and there's 11 defenders on the other side of the ball, that's where the issues pop up and there's a lot of concern there.
Staying at the quarterback position, three seniors, and this will be the last question I got for you, Tony, three seniors that can threaten defenses with their arm and with their legs. You have Everett Golson, who from Florida State, who for all intents and purposes, it seems like he's going to win the starting job down there. You have Dak Prescott, who had such a big season last year for Mississippi State. And then you've got Trevon Boykin, who a lot of people think is a Heisman contender this year for TCU. Of those three players, who are scouts most excited about in terms of their NFL potential moving forward?
I don't think they're really excited about any of them, but I think Prescott is head and shoulders above the other two. I mean, Golston grades as a priority free agent. Boykin is a free agent. I don't think Golston or Boykin are going to be quarterbacks at the next level. They don't have the measurables. Golston really has to rebound from a poor 2014 campaign. You know, Dak Prescott, he's got the athleticism. Like you said, he can make plays with his arm or with his legs. Needs to improve on his mechanics, needs to improve on his throwing fundamentals, become more of an accurate passer. Right now he's looked upon, and I think justifiably so, as a middle-round choice. It's a matter of going from athlete and thrower to passer, to really becoming a patient pocket passer and showing accuracy. You know, the ability to throw the ball 80 yards down the field is impressive. But if you're overthrowing receivers, you're making receivers work too hard to catch the ball, you know, teams don't want that. Scouts don't want that. So of the three you mentioned, you know, Prescott is head and shoulders above the other, but I don't think scouts are excited about any of them.
Truly one of a kind. Tony Pauline, again, you can find him on Twitter, at Tony Pauline. I appreciate you joining us here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We'll talk to you soon, Tony.
Thanks for having me, friend.
Great stuff again from Tony. Again, you could follow him on Twitter, at Tony Pauline. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. Give me a follow. I love going back and forth with football fans, whether you're an Eagles fan or not. I think that I do a good job of interacting with fans across the NFL
you're
and
fair.
College football landscape.
You're
I
fair.
Think so. Thank you. Thank you. I try not to, you know, present too much bias. Obviously, a lot of the content that I'm sending out has an Eagles spin, but if you want to talk football, just give me a shout. You know, give me a follow. I love going back and forth with you guys. I tweet out the links to this podcast, all the other podcasts I'm part of, the Eagle Eye in the Sky column. There's all kinds of vines and different breakdowns. I'm going to start something. I'm hoping next week, actually. We're going to call it a little hashtag Touchdown Thursday, but we'll see. We'll see.
That will be on my
tease? It is a little bit of a tease. We'll see what that'll entail. But again, I really appreciate all of you out there that spread the word on social media. So thanks again, and keep that up. So thanks again to Greg and to Chris and to Tony Pauline and all of you guys out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, you're on Stitcher or Spotify or Podbay, of course, PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. And thanks again. If you get the time, go on, rate the show, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Shoot me a question. I want to hear from all of you guys and keep all of you happy. So wherever you listen, just go on, shoot us a comment, and we can keep making this show better each and every week. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.